From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of March 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, a Senate committee is working on energy legislation that would step up the nation's commitment to clean, renewable energy. The president is under pressure not to change NAFTA, and the Secretary of the Treasury is defending the administration's plan to create a carbon trading system. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then, as we close out the end of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg. It all comes up on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, futures in the nearby wheat contract settled the day like this. In fact, the whole grains floor was up just a bit today. Futures for the March wheat at 516 and a quarter, up 12 and a quarter. The May at 527, up 12 cents. July up 11 and three quarters, 538 and three quarters, the settlement price there. March wheat in Kansas City, 13 cents higher at $5.68. March corn in Chicago, up 3.5 at 352 and three quarters. May futures at 361 and a half, up 3 cents. And July corn, $3.71, up 3 1/4. September futures up 3 at 379 1/4. And the December harvest month for 2009 at 390 3/4, up 3. The March 2010 contract up 3 at 402 1/4. March soybean futures $8.79, 16 and a half higher. May futures up 15 at 867. July $8.66, up 14 and 3/4. The August beans at $8.53, up 15 and a half. And September futures up 16 cents at $8.28. And November beans $8.15. Settlement price for the new crop harvest month up 15 and a half cents. January contract 2010 at $8.23 and 3/4, up 15 and a half cents. March bean meal at $2.74.20, up 5.40. March bean oil at $30.76, up 32 cents at the end of the day. April live cattle futures $82.45, $1.45 lower. The June down $1.27.5 at $81.07.5. March feeders at $90.50, up $1.70. And the April lean hogs today, settlement price $62.50, up 7.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures on a settlement price today at $45.52, up $1.91 for the nearby April contract. May at $47.72, up $2.06. April ethanol $1.50.06. That's 0.4 cents lower. Natural gas at $3.93.07 is up down 15 1/10 rather. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.33.04. Here we go with an upturn, 0.2 cents higher. Diesel fuel heating oil $1.22.04, up 6 4/10 in the nearby. And the April lead option for the propane futures at 60 7/10 cents, down 1 6/10 cents. March gold futures $942.10. That's $942.10, up $15.10 for the March gold. Dow Jones Industrial Average off 105 points now at 64.89, and the U.S. dollar is trading 58 lower at 88.51. The CRB index at 209.67 is up 3.14 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour. What a beautiful afternoon. High should be near 70, 69 degrees outside the studios at this point, partly cloudy. Low tonight, 52, cloudy, some showers likely, maybe a thunderstorm or two. Tomorrow, right here in Urbana-Champaign, a high of 68, mostly cloudy, mild, a few showers, a thunderstorm. Once again, the high of 68, the wind from the south at 10 to 20 miles an hour. And then tomorrow night, a low of 52, cloudy, some showers and a few thunderstorms, the low of 52. And finally on Sunday, cloudy with a period of rain. The high Sunday this week, in that is, will be near 60.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is Friday afternoon, time to check in on the agricultural and outside markets. Mike Zuzulo is with us, as always, from Lafayette, Indiana, where he's at Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hi there, Todd.
Boy, oh boy, where should we start today? Kind of interesting things. The grains and oil seeds were higher in Chicago, but New York is lower at this hour.
Yeah, and you know, we got a big change versus last Friday, it seems like, both fundamentally and technically. The dollar just isn't looked as favorably upon by the trade as it was a week ago today. You know, fundamentally, we now have an 8.1% unemployment level. January's Purchasing Manager Index, or the ISM Index as it's called now, came in the 13th straight month of losses. That's an excellent forward-looking report that the trade in New York really looks at. Europe also cut a lot of their interest rates around the European countries and the EU leading that charge this week. And so it seemed like fundamentally the dollar didn't have the robustness, and the U.S. was looked upon as more of a weak country and a weak leader instead of a safe haven. And technically, we heard a lot at midweek, especially around Wednesday, when the Chinese news was popping that they were going to, you know, re-stimulate and double down on their fiscal and monetary stimulus in their country. We heard a lot of rhetoric and a lot of anecdotal news up in Chicago from our contacts that you're looking at a situation where the dollar had no real follow-through buying. It got up to its old highs and really kind of petered out, and that gave, I think, probably a lot of the technicians and a lot of fundamentalists between those different issues going on that we were just talking about here, kind of gave the markets the ability to find some support, led by the energy. So nice way to end the week, and we actually turned the market around so that the corn and the beans, at least in the front end, were able to eke out a small gain.
Can you maybe give us some context to why it would be important that China stimulate the global economy as opposed to the United States?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. When we heard the news Wednesday about them having to come in or wanting to come in and put another $580 billion of money into their economy, the first way we looked at it was from an economic perspective that that's not really very friendly, because it does really show and kind of prove to the rest of the market that China really isn't the leader to take the market out of the hole. It's really going to have to be the United States, Japan, and Germany, like it historically always is. And I'd throw United Kingdom and Great Britain in there as a fourth partner. But it's going to be very hard for China, because they are, after all, the world's factory. Yes, they have the currency reserves. Yes, they have a communist regime that can really do whatever it wants to. But most of these things are short-term issues, and that's what we're kind of fearful of right now, is that you get a short-term rally, short-covering rally. If the dollar doesn't break to the downside and break its trend line, which it tested today, and this is a three-month trend line, mind you, and the wheat, which came up against its resistance, its trend line resistance, again, a 3 to 5 month trend line resistance, if you can't get some technical breaks like that through trend lines, then we're going to have to say China is more deflationary, and the United States and its economic numbers, the forward-looking economic numbers, not the ones that look behind us, still promote more demand erosion, not a bottoming in the business cycle. And so that's kind of the way we're looking at how we close this week out. If we get some technical numbers that jump above in wheat and jump below in the dollar, that could very well stimulate a nice retracement, nice short covering rally. But it would be one we'd probably sell into as we get ahead of the March 31st acreage numbers.
Yesterday, Dan Zwicker and I started to take up wheat. I thought probably you and I might continue that conversation today. You opened the door. So what do we need to look at? Dan suggested, and probably rightfully so, that, of course, this is a supply-led marketplace, which means we would have to limit the supply of wheat. There is a problem in the U.S. Any other problems around the globe?
China's situation has improved, but some of our contacts that have good feelers over there are saying they're not out of the woods yet, and that really March, just like here in the United States, which makes sense because we're both in the northern hemisphere, March really is a make-or-break month. They need good moisture, and they don't want a very, very cold spell come down in the later part of March, early part of April, once they do break dormancy. They're not out of the woods yet. They have improved. I think from the wheat standpoint, it's not just supply. Supply obviously is number one because of the weather, but it's also very politically sensitive, and it would only make sense in terms of currencies and Middle East policy and things like that, that the wheat would be the number one leader out of the hole. And if the dollar does break, it would make a lot of sense that we would become once again competitive on the world market. And we have seen business in wheat. You know, that's something that we hit this morning on the radio, that there has been a good amount of business done with Syria and some other big countries that have come in for wheat. It's nice to see that. It's kind of like the unleaded gasoline market. The gasoline market here and the cash has been very, very strong the last month, and it promotes the idea that supply and demand are kind of at an equilibrium right now. But again, what we fear is that if we can't get the stock market and the banks leading the stock market out of the hole and forming a bottom first, then future demand erosion is being set up right now.
So really we need the stock market to turn before we can even think about laying the future of commodities on the shoulders of wheat.
Well, we're going to talk about at the Beef House, Todd, and what I'm going to do, I'm in the middle of writing a special report to hand out for everybody that comes to the tables during the day to meet our clearing firm people and to meet the guys at EFG. What we're trying to lay out is the business cycle or demand in general in the world and the United States bottoms in the early fourth quarter, late third quarter, so say October-November time period. Historically, commodity and stock prices will bottom about a quarter to two quarters ahead of that. So what we're looking at is, if that's the case and we have no moisture problems here in the United States Midwest, corn acres get planted at a relatively quick or at least five-year average pace, it would make sense that the market would probably have its most downside or risk premium in the futures taken out of it between now and the middle of May, both from the outside market perspective and getting the crop safely in the ground, taking it another notch down and saying, okay, let's wait for summer. So we're trying to lay in here with our analysis and our marketing plan an April-May low for the corn and beans and wheat. And obviously the crucial part of the corn market is that wheat bottoms about a month before the corn and beans. And so what we're actually looking at is maybe a wheat low in April and then a corn and bean low in May. And all that hinged upon our demand and our business cycle finding a bottom in that fourth quarter time period.
So how likely do you think the wheat low would be in April? Apparently fairly likely, I guess.
I do feel that way. I mean, if we're going to have problems and they're going to be meaningful supply problems, they're going to have to be right here, right now, because once we come out of dormancy and we start growing, again, it's going to be real hard to beat the wheat down too much. It's most vulnerable right here, right now. If the dollar is going to break, if it's going to change trend, it's going to be relatively soon here. And what I would say to you is that some of the charts would suggest the next week, the next 2 weeks, the dollar would need to be in a corrective wave for this type of pattern to set itself up. If the dollar doesn't correct in the next week or two, it's got a whole nother leg higher ahead of it, and that would just spell very, very big trouble for the equities and for the commodities as a whole. I mean, we're looking for a low here, and everybody's looking for the exact same low. The problem is that we've got to get the demand low in place first, and that's really where this economic data has to lead us out. And the banks are the number one thing, like you say, because they hold the key to the credit markets, the housing market, and the stock market after all. So if we can't get the banks to find a bottom, and many of them made 52-week lows on Wednesday when the rest of the stock market was going straight up, the banks were making new 52-week lows. That's not a good indication that the demand and the stock market bottom is really, really in.
Well, it doesn't sound all that encouraging, but I suppose you look for bright spots. Hopefully wheat will be one of those in the coming future. I do have a couple of other questions about wheat. Do you think it will be northern hemisphere wheat or southern hemisphere wheat that triggers putting the bottom in? And so, generally speaking, there's a whole lot more wheat grown in the northern hemisphere than there is in the southern hemisphere, though we talk about Australia an awful lot. So do you have a drether there, and is it a crop failure or a political failure that creates the problem?
I think it would have to be a crop failure that creates a problem. We, like Dan, are trying to distinguish this year versus the last 3 years. We had demand-led rallies the last 3 years, made it tough for producers to sell those rallies because it was, after all, demand and kind of a freight train-type demand. Now we've got more of a supply-led rally outlook, at least for the first half of the marketing year. I guess I got to go with the northern hemisphere, and I believe that from a standpoint that if the U.S. has problems with its crop and China has a little bit of a cut in its crop, that will help offset some of the additional bushels and above normal yields and production potential that the Black Sea and the Baltic area is looking for here, and Europe is looking for here in the April-May time period. The Baltic and the European and Black Sea regions have been the thorn in our sides you know, the past 5 or 7 years. So we really want to see a problem there, if anywhere, and that obviously would be in Northern Hemisphere. So if we get a little bit of a trim in a haircut in China, a haircut and trim in the Black Sea, and then a haircut and a trim in the Southern Plains, all of a sudden you're talking about global wheat supplies that aren't much bigger than where we were last year, and I think the market will wake up to that.
Mike, thanks much for being with us.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate the time today.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzalove, we'll talk with him again Tuesday over at our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. We hope you join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on March 10th for the 2009 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. Our lineup is stellar. It includes Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises, ADM Chief Economist Perry Dixon, Westchester CEO Murray Wise, Bob Bastifer of First Midwest Bank, University of Illinois Agricultural Economist Gary Schnicke, and WILL Meteorologist Ed Kieser. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. Thanks to these agribusinesses for helping to support this year's meeting: the Andersons, AgriGold Hybrids, ADM Investment Services, and L&M Commodities. In agricultural news, a group of 19 senators sent a letter to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner on Thursday, asking that the administration force banks and other financial institutions that have taken federal bailout funds to work with farmers to restructure farm loans to help them keep their homes and businesses. Banks that have made loans that are guaranteed by the Farm Service Agency have already been required to work with farmers that have troubled loans, but the senators are asking that the same standard that is being applied to home loans be applied to farm loans. Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee Chairman Jeff Bingaman says he is optimistic that the committee can report energy legislation in the next 3 or 4 weeks or before Congress takes its spring recess beginning on April 6. Bingaman says the proposed legislation would, quote, step up the focus and commitment to energy efficiency, largely by encouraging the development of more U.S.-made clean energy and energy efficiency technology. The bill would also include a financing mechanism to support the development of electric power from renewable energy. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley is pressing President Barack Obama to promise not to change any agricultural provisions of the North American Free Trade Agreement in talks with Canada and Mexico. Grassley, in a letter to Obama yesterday, says, quote, I am concerned that if the trade agreement is reopened, Mexico will seek to rebalance tariff concessions in a way that will adversely affect agricultural exports from Iowa. He goes on to say, I also ask you to confirm that if this trade agreement is reopened, you will not agree to any increases in or reinstatements of tariffs on U.S. agricultural products under the trade agreement. A White House official says that they are reviewing Grassley's letter. U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner yesterday defended President Barack Obama's plan to raise hundreds of billions of dollars in revenues from a carbon emissions cap-and-trade system. Geithner said the Obama plan is based on an approach that has successfully reduced acid rain emissions, and the system will begin the process of shifting energy incentives toward new, cleaner technologies. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Up next, the soil fertility specialist at the University of Illinois is planning a sulfur study for 2009. I'll have more on the macronutrient, how it's used in the corn plant, and and how farmers and landowners can participate in the U of I research. We think of fertilizer or plant food as being primarily N, P, and K, or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The next macronutrient on the list, says University of Illinois soil fertility and plant nutrition specialist Fabian Fernandez, is sulfur.
Sulfur is one of the essential elements, so the plant needs sulfur in order to complete its life cycle. And it requires quite a bit of sulfur. We divide the nutrients into macro elements or micro elements. Macro means that they are needed in large supply, micro that are needed in less supply. And so sulfur is one of the macro elements, meaning that it's needed in a large supply. And typically we don't worry about it because there is enough in the soil to supply the needs of the crop. But as I mentioned, we are seeing more and more responses to sulfur as we increase production and we reduce the amount of inputs of sulfur.
The amount of sulfur soils in the state are being exposed to annually has declined dramatically over the last three decades. It means, says the soil scientist, that adding a bit of sulfur to the fertilizer mix can cause a corn yield response. He surmises, but cannot be sure, that response comes because of the lower sulfur inputs.
Some of the reasons are that we have higher yields than what we had 3 years ago, so there is more removal or more potential removal of sulfur. Industry is burning a lot cleaner, so there is less sulfur deposition from the atmosphere. And there are less inputs of sulfur in the farming system. There are less fertilizers that have sulfur in them, as well as insecticides and pesticides.
It seems clear, then, that there is a lack of this macronutrient, but that doesn't mean it's true. So, U of I Extension's Fabian Fernandez is setting up a statewide sulfur study. He's looking for a few good farmers to give him a hand.
That's right, yes. We would like to get a good representation of the state. So looking at, we are right now looking for volunteers that could participate in this program. As many sites as possible. The more sites we have, the better it is for this type of research. And in terms of what we are looking for specifically, we are looking for fields that are low in organic matter, fields that have coarse texture, sandy soils, types that will more likely respond to sulfur, and so across the state, basically.
Fernandez says for the purposes of this study, he is not interested in testing soils where sulfur or manure has been applied in the last 5 years. Those interested in participating in the sulfur study can call or email Fabian Fernandez on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. His email address is Fernandez, without the Z on the end of it, Fernandez@illinois.edu, and his phone number is 217-333-4426. That's 217-333-4426. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural program is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Chocolate Cheesecake Day. The first mention of cheesecake in history was during the ancient Olympic Games. Cato the Elder, who was born in 234 BC, wrote of cheesecake preparation in his Farming Manual de Agricultura. It's the oldest surviving work of Latin prose, which looked at up-to-date agricultural practices. American-style cheesecakes relying on cream cheese was invented in 1872. This new high-fat cheese was developed for the Empire Cheese Company and later became known as Philadelphia brand cream cheese, which is now widely used in the creation of cheesecakes. It's also National Frozen Food Day. It was Clarence Birdseye who invented and commercialized a method for quick freezing food products. In 1923, Birdseye used a $7 electric fan, buckets of brine, and cakes of ice for packing fresh food into waxed cardboard boxes and flash freezing them under high pressure. In 1930, retail frozen foods went on sale for the first time in Springfield, Massachusetts. Various fruits, vegetables, meat, and fish were offered for sale. On this day in agricultural history in 1899, aspirin was patented by Felix Hoffmann of the German company Bayer. Aspirin was first sold as a powder. The first tablets were produced in 1915. And in 1912 on this date, Nabisco debuted the Oreo cookie. Originally, the Oreo was mound-shaped and came in two flavors, lemon meringue or cream. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here on the U of I campus at the Illinois State Water Survey is with us, where he serves as the director. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather for the weekend.
Well, it won't be like it is today, that's for sure. Well, it'll be warm for a while, but it's also going to be a little more wet across Illinois and Indiana this weekend. Right now, there's low pressure starting to get well organized now in western Kansas and Colorado, and warm front extends across the Midwest. And, of course, we're getting the warm air today. But as that low moves toward us tonight and tomorrow, we'll see the moisture increase, and it's certainly a noticeable increase in humidity today outside, along with the warm weather. But we'll see showers and thunderstorms developing along that front. And so most of the two-state region is going to see some rain this weekend, tomorrow, and even into Sunday.
And then will we get cold again?
Well, not right away. It looks like Monday will be another mild day, actually another round of showers possibly later Monday into Tuesday. But then a strong cold front looks like it'll come through late on Tuesday night, early Wednesday, and it'll bring us quite a bit colder weather for the latter half of the week. Temperatures probably be down and even possibly is into the upper 30s for highs on perhaps Wednesday or Thursday, but certainly well below seasonal normals for this time of year, and nothing like we've had today.
It's just been a magnificent day. You want to venture out any further than the mid part of next
sure.
week?
Sure. It looks like it will stay cool for a good part of the latter half of next week for almost certain. It'll get slightly warmer, but we're not going to see a return to 60s or 70s. But beyond that, with high pressure moving back to the East Coast again, it looks like southerly flow will set up across the Midwest and will be possibly in another mild, wet weather pattern for the following week. So we'll get some days of dry weather and then some days of wet weather. It looks like a pretty active pattern overall for the month of March, as far as we can see.
Some of the hard red winter wheat belt has been suffering. Here in the Midwest, how are we setting up for the planting season?
Well, I think the biggest concern at this point is going to be wet soils. If we keep getting rain on top of the soils we've managed to pack with a lot of moisture during the winter, that could be a problem. But other than that, we certainly aren't looking at any significant dry areas in much of the corn and soybean belt at this point. The only places that are a little dry are parts of eastern Minnesota up through central and northern Wisconsin and Michigan, but that's at the fringes of the Corn Belt. So, and they'll likely see some precipitation over the next week or two. So I think it's moisture-wise, the case might be too much moisture rather than too little in the Midwest, but hopefully we'll get by.
Thanks much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, belongs to NOAA, that's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, and is located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the U of I campus. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great weekend. Don't forget to listen to Commodity Week on the air or on the web at willag.org. We'll post it to that WILLAG site. By after 6 o'clock this evening, our guest will be Roy Huckabee. Have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.